Hey gang, let's face it, you're probably listening to this show and all of your favorite shows on your phone. Are you tired of filling up your phone with all your favorite podcasts? You want to stream them like you do movies and music? Well, try Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is an app that allows you to stream over 5,000 of your favorite shows right to your smartphone or pad. Download it for free at Stitcher.com or find it in your app store. I use it, plus How Did I Get Here is on it with over 5,000 of your favorite podcasts and radio shows. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Special show, a mother's show, a little late for Mother's Day. My co-host, Susanna Schaffel, is here.
Hello, Johnny.
And we are joined by, please introduce all of yourselves one by one. First, Susanna Schaffel.
I'm Susanna Schaffel.
And Schaffel.
Yeah, but you say Schaffel, which is kind of cool, too. I like that. I can get down with that. And this is Lulu. She doesn't have much to say yet, but she's looking at everybody.
So we spoke a while back, a few weeks ago, and you said that you wanted to get some moms together and talk to them on the show.
Yeah.
I want to remind everyone, you speak like directly into your mic when you do. And then, yeah. And when you laugh, just pull it away. So, okay. So introduce the panel that you have put together.
So I have put together a lovely panel here of mamas. Raina Rose is here with big boy Benny in the house. And then we've got Elizabeth McQueen.
Hello.
And the lovely Jazz Mills.
Hello.
And my doula, but she's also a rock star, Savannah Welch.
Hey,
she's
hey.
Awesome. Welch or Welsh?
Welch.
That's what I thought. Welch. Like the juice, right?
Juice.
Okay, cool.
So can we start by with my question is, what is a medulla?
A medulla?
I don't know what
a
that
medulla,
is.
Isn't that a doula?
A doula, sorry.
A doula.
I thought she said
I'll
a medulla.
Savannah.
No, it's okay. That's really awesome.
What's
actually
a doula, Savannah?
A doula is somebody that assists the mother and her partner in labor. Okay. So
doulas
yes.
are amazing because a lot of times in birthing classes they're like, let your husband help you out during birth, but then like your husband has not ever given birth.
They usually freak out.
He doesn't know what's going on, and they're freaking out. So it's nice to have like a woman who knows what she's doing, helping you give birth.
So we do not do anything medically, but we support the mother and her partner, if there is one there, emotionally and physically. So
okay, and so yeah. That's what you did. You went and Susanna, you had a midwife. You can nod.
yeah, I had a midwife. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Maybe you should have this mic.
And no, it's
did
okay.
Did you have a baby? Did you at home? Was Lulu born at home?
No, she was not. I think I was a little too nervous to do a home birth. Though I might do one, you know, if I had another baby. I'm not sure if I'm going to do that. But
okay.
I did it at a birthing center, Austin Area Birthing Center, which was really lovely. And it's kind of like an in-between a home birth and a hospital. It's like a really lovely center where they let you give birth naturally if that's what you want to do. And yeah, it's midwives and they kind of provide a support group for you. So
when you go to a center, is it set up so that if anything does happen, there's the facilities there to take care of it right away?
Yeah.
As opposed to
yeah.
your home and having to call an ambulance or
well,
something. Or
it's the same. It's actually, it's kind of the same. I mean, something did happen. Lulu had meconium aspiration. So we had to send her. I had her naturally at the birthing center, but then they had to call an ambulance and we ended up going to Dell for 3 days. So yeah. Same thing would have happened at a home birth. Raina did a home birth. She could probably tell you a little bit more.
Raina, talk about
that.
The home birth.
Oh, okay. I had Benny in our bathtub. I had my first son actually at a birthing center and it was wonderful and he was fine. I had him in the water tub, candle lit, and he was fine. And then I actually had to go to the hospital afterwards. But this time with my second boy, we just had the baby in the bathtub, got into bed, snuggled, ate some food. Dreamy. And it was real, real sweet. It was incredibly painful. But after that, it was really sweet.
And yeah, we leave a lot out.
Yeah, let's not leave that out.
I also did a home birth with Charlie.
Yeah, Savannah did a home birth.
Okay.
I did.
And that was in Dallas?
No, it was actually in Wimberley.
In Wimberley? Oh.
Yes.
Who was your midwife? Did you guys all share a midwife? Or was
there's
there
a lot in town.
No, I did a doula, but in the hospital.
Okay.
Natural birth.
Yeah, my midwife, her name was actually Brielle Epstein. Mm-hmm. And then her assistant, which was someone that she mentored under through her training, was G.B. Gala, was her name.
And she's the rock star midwife in town.
She's been around since the 70s. I delivered
a lot of people.
So, and then I had a doula, and then my mom and Jeff were there. We were in a cabin on my dad's property, a little one room cabin, and it was awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
But you don't freak out? Like, don't you? Like, I mean, look, I don't have a baby and I'm a dude. So all I can think is, like, I want to, like, be at the hospital.
Right. Well, I mean, to be honest, you know, okay, we could talk about birth probably. That could be its own podcast. But, yeah, I mean, it's a natural process. So if you're low risk and you feel comfortable in your setting, then statistics show that you have the best results if you're comfortable and with people that are familiar to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I would say fear definitely plays a role. But that's also the thing that can inhibit progress and can kind of work to your disadvantage.
Yeah.
So the more that you can be in control of your environment and nurtured and empowered, then birth can happen naturally easier. That's kind of in a nutshell.
Well said.
I was just thinking about the people that normally listen to this show. They're probably like, what?
Whoa, where did Johnny just take us? Are we on the right podcast? Is this the right station?
Yes, because this is the right station.
I was gonna say, we can switch station over to playing to music.
But did you, and you said you had your babies in a hospital?
Yeah.
With a doula.
We decided to have our baby in a hospital just because in case anything went wrong, we wanted to be there. But we definitely, Dave and I definitely wanted to shoot for a natural birth.
Yeah.
So we hired a doula. Her name is Deborah Day. She's also she's mostly a midwife, but she does labor support. And she was amazing. And because what happened was, like, I needed help. I thought I was doing really good. And then when I went into transition, I was like, oh my. And then she,
what do you mean,
like,
when you went into transition? What does that mean to someone that doesn't
so
know?
So transition is like the final stage. Oh, transition is like the final stage of labor. It's the really, really painful part. And I'd been laboring for maybe like 16 hours and I thought I was an earth mother goddess because it wasn't that bad and I was handling it great. And then when I went into transition, it was like, I have no reference for this. Yeah, you see your animal
you
self.
An animal.
Yeah. And it was great to have her there. And it was also, I had great doctors who were really supportive of my decision. I mean, at one point I was like, I've made a decision. I want drugs. Like, I've done enough. I want drugs.
But and that's like a classic scenario.
I did that too.
And my doctor
at home.
Yeah. And my doctor was like, you've come this far. Like, just keep on going. So I think that the risk that you run if you do it in a hospital is if the doctor on call is not as supportive of that, like, that might be the only risk. But
there's a real chance I would have ended up with a medicated birth if I'd been in a hospital.
Me too.
I didn't need it. I didn't
too,
need
right
it.
Now.
Yeah, it
yeah,
turns out.
You want the drugs if they're there, of course.
Oh, hell yeah.
But if they're
because
not there,
the worst
I kept trying to run away. I don't even know where I was
where
going. I was like, I'm just running away right
I
now.
I announced to the room that I was done. I was just, I'm all done. I'm all done with this whole thing. I'm done now. And they were like, well, you're not. But you're close and we keep going. But yeah, I think the way that you put it, that you have no reference for it. Like, people ask, what is birth like? And it's not like anything you could ever compare it to. So
a woman
of course,
once told me it was like trying to pull a grapefruit out of my junk.
But it's not. It's
but
like,
it's not.
It's not.
But
I
no.
mean, the thing is, like, once it's
your body
done,
is built to
that.
Do it.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a thing
right.
that your
body
your
is built
to do but
to
has
do.
Never
right, right.
done.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't
so
expand.
It would be more excruciating.
It doesn't get dilated. I know some of that lingo.
You get to it. Yes, good. Yeah. We get to a point in transition, especially where you're like, I don't know if I can do this. Yeah. I don't think I can.
And that's when sure.
I'm going to break or something.
Yeah.
And so you reach for drugs if they're available. And then it turns out that you don't need them if you don't take them, you know, typically. I mean, I don't want to say generally, but yeah, for the most part, I might have had a medicated birth had I been in a hospital.
Yeah,
right, because so, it'd be easy to get to.
And I think also, you don't know how you're going to be, and you don't know how it's going to go down until you're in it. And not everyone wants a natural birth, and not people who want natural births, sometimes they don't get to have them because things happen. And sometimes people think that they'd be totally into a natural birth. And then when they get into it, it's like, no, this is not for me. You know, like,
yeah.
But at the end, hopefully, the end result
is all
the same. Yeah,
there's no right or wrong. You just
have a baby.
You get a baby at the end of it, however you get it.
And I want to say, disclaimer, a doula does not only assist in natural labor. I mean, our gig is to support the mom in whatever her choices, or mother and father, in whatever those choices are. So we try to provide them with information so they can make an educated decision about what their choices are. And then we support that. Yeah. So if it's like, I want an epidural right away, I just want you there to like text my family about it. Then that's what I'm doing, you know? So, yeah.
I would just like to take a second to say that Jazz isn't talking because she's very sweetly rocking my baby over in the corner, and it's awesome to watch. Yeah. She's got like this peaceful power over Lulu. It's awesome.
You know, I know Jazz played for a while into her pregnancy, and you did too. I saw. How far did you, everyone, how far did you guys take this rock and roll pregnancy?
My last gig was about 2 weeks before my eldest son was born. So we did about 100 shows while I was pregnant.
Wow.
And traveled a lot of miles.
Whoa.
The second one we did a lot less.
How, let me ask you this, Raina, how does that affect your performance? Like, you're dealing with a whole new set of hormones, and if you channel like your feelings into your performances, that could lead into some
good
intensity.
Stuff, some good art.
Yeah, some
I was
great
a lot
stuff.
More tired, that's for sure, when I was playing, when I was pregnant. I was a lot more tired. My hands got really swollen, so I had a lot of carpal tunnel issues while I was playing. But mostly, I found that I felt like this was the last kind of time where I would have my hands free enough to continue doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we toured with my eldest son for about 18 months after he was born, and then it got really hard. Then he started being mobile, and he started wanting more attention and wanting to have a routine.
Right.
So that was kind of the end of my road in this period of my life for now. But it was definitely like, it was a lot more exhausting touring pregnant and touring with a baby.
Yeah.
It was a lot more work.
I could see.
I have a really great partner, so that helps a lot.
That's great.
Yeah.
Are you, Suzanne, are you nervous? Have you played any yet since Lulu's
I've played
before?
A few shows.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been great, actually.
Have you taken her?
Yeah. No.
Oh.
I was like, no. I always take her with me a little bit, I guess. You know, it's like I always have her in my head. So, but I took about 6 weeks off, I think, and then returned for like, it was really funny actually, my first gig back was a private gig that was like really long because I had to be there for the early sounds, you know, it's like a wedding gig almost. And but what was so funny was at this corporate office, and so they actually had a nursing room. They had like a mother's, like, you know, because Obamacare like has made it like, you know, a
That's
law
awesome.
Where you have to have it. And so it was kind of perfect. I checked in with the event coordinator and I was like, I'm gonna have to take a break and like and basically pump, you know, like halfway through this set. I guess I'll do it in the bathroom. And she was like, no, we have a room here for you. And I was like, best gig ever, best first gig back ever. So I don't expect all, you know, one-to-one bar did not have a nursing room for me the other night, but that's okay. But I just want to really quickly say, I know Raina's got to go soon to pick up her lovely son, but I wanted to personally thank her on the mic, because when I got pregnant, when I found out I was pregnant, I kind of freaked out about, and this is honestly kind of what I wanted this whole thing to be about, was just like more of like the emotional toll and just the balance of like motherhood and being an artist and musician and what it means. And I think I had all these really like crazy ideas in my head of what people were going to think of me and what was going to happen to my career. And I like reached out to Raina, even though we're not like very close, and like on Facebook I messaged her and I was like, I'm pregnant, nobody knows, oh my god, is it the end of my career, what's going on? And I ended up doing the same thing with Elizabeth and Jazz and Savannah. They all like within like, it was kind of funny, this group of ladies kind of helped me process and deal with the whole just being pregnant thing before anybody, I think I told y'all before, like anybody else knew. So
it's
anyway,
an honor.
Raina, take it away. What did you tell me?
What did I tell you? Well, I'm bumping into things. I kind of feel like women as musicians, we are naturally creators, right? So we don't need to stop creating just because we've created something different. It's all a balance. And the thing that I've really learned with my second baby is that it's, everything is a phase. like we toured a lot with Emmett until he was about 18 months. And then when he turned two, I went out by myself. I went on a 10-day tour with my friend Rebecca, and we went all over the place, and I thought I was going to be a disaster. And you know what? I had a great time.
Awesome.
I had a great time. Emmett was fine. I like slept in, you know, weird places again, and like felt like I was doing the other thing that I am here to do other than just be a mom.
Yeah.
Which is also the thing that you are here to do if you're called to do it.
Right.
But it's interesting too. I had the same fears, like my career is over. I'll never be this like ingenue character again.
Right, exactly. There goes my sexiness.
Moms are sexy.
Totally. And that's the thing is I always thought that. I was like, God.
These women are beautiful.
I had so much respect and awe and whatever for you know, women I knew who were mothers who were also like creating and just being generally badass. And I just thought it almost gives you this like extra power or something. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so now I see it. Now I feel it. But at the time I was just like, I couldn't wrap my brain around it. And now I'm like, I feel like sexier and more powerful and just more, I think, womanly or or animalistic or something than I ever have.
Right.
You know?
No, but I can see because when you, I'm closer to you on that level, and I feel like I can see that with your career was your baby. Like, mm-hmm. you were feeding this thing, and then all of a sudden there's this...
You got another thing
totally.
To feed, actual baby.
Yeah, an actual human being. And that's what I'm going to say is, like, Bruce Springsteen, I read one time, said, the weirdest thing about having kids, the biggest thing that you notice is your dogs just become dogs.
That is so true.
No, I feel so bad for my dog. I'm like, I love her so much, but I'm like, I'm sorry, Sailor. You're not like my little girl anymore. My whole world revolves around this, you know, other living creature. Yeah. You know,
So what I'm wondering is, I bet there's a thing of fear that sets in with you with like, oh, I can't care about this thing as much as I did before. But it's just different, right?
It's just different. I think it's just different.
It's kind of an identity thing, and I think especially I can speak for you and I in the sense that these our babies were little surprises, and I called them my, you know, divine intervention, you
totally,
know, but at the very beginning it didn't totally feel that way. And so trying to just incorporate that part, that mother, into your identity, it is not something that you created. You didn't go and seek that, which is something that you were probably really used to doing.
Right.
You were just going, okay, I'm crafting this career and this identity and who I am. And this was something that was brought on to you, you know?
Right.
So then trying to just embrace that and incorporate that into who you are and how you view yourself and how you feel like your fans view you and all of those things. I mean, it's a shift. And, I was so lucky because I think in the Trishes, one of the other Trishes, Jamie Wilson, mm-hmm. had already had a baby, and we had had her baby on the road with us for a year and a half when
you
I got
like
pregnant with
baby,
Charlie.
Baby education, like
we
on the road.
All did.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, and I mean, we
your thing.
Absolutely,
yeah, and our booking agent was already like knew how to promote. I mean, not how to promote, but how to advance our shows. Like the questions that he would ask, like about the green room.
Didn't even think about that.
And,
that's really important.
And you know, just our whole thing and how that changed. And we would get a hotel close to the venue as possible so that we could soundcheck, get the kid to the hotel and get them situated, get back to the show. Like, we all changed how we rolled.
Yeah.
According to this baby, and getting to watch her and who she's incredibly resourceful and so strong and emotionally very stable, and just to have her guidance through that was like, you know, it was such a blessing. So yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate to that feeling with Suzanne, and I saw that in her too. I was like, okay, check it, you're gonna be great. And actually, like, kind of
bye Raina.
Thank you so much, Raina.
Bye.
We'll do like a break. We'll do like 10 more of these. I feel like we could talk forever about these.
This will be a series.
Bye, Benny.
Bye, Benny.
Hi.
How long did you play, Elizabeth?
Before or after?
Before.
I had kids.
How pregnant were you on stage?
I traveled, I think, until
I think I went like actively on the road until maybe the last month. But no, that's not true, because we went to Alaska and I was 7 months pregnant, I think. But then there was one tour where I thought I was going to go. And then I think it was maybe 3 weeks out, and I just called them and I was like, I can't go to Colorado right now, guys. Yeah. Like, I think I might have a baby, but I think I was like dilated and effaced at that point. So
what
is
effaced?
My cervix was thinned out.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
More cool terminology.
Yeah.
Efface. Just don't ask about
By the end of this
plug.
Series.
Don't ask
You're
going to
know so much
plug.
About childbirth.
I don't want to know.
That's
about
my
mucus
favorite
plug.
Term that I learned while pregnant.
The
it's
mucus
like,
plug?
The yeah. mucus plug.
Don't Google image it.
Yeah.
I'm not, but I'm just saying, is that what? It does the plug come out? Is that what the water
That's
breaks?
That's kind of the sign. It's like the sign before
Different
the
than
water
a water bag, yeah. But yeah.
But it kind of means that you're pretty much going to have a baby soon. Yeah. So, yeah.
You're going to be an expert.
I know. Yeah, I know.
I've got all kinds of books I could send you.
I could be in a doula myself.
A medulla.
A medulla.
Yes. Medulla Gowdy.
A doula.
That's your next band. Medulla.
That's the name
I
of my
know,
next
I
band.
Told her to come in here and she's
kidnapped your child.
Jazz here in a second.
Ferris Doula's Day Off. I'm working on that. Let me ask you guys this, because this goes along with the dog thing. Like, as people, as artists, as like self-absorbed entertainers, you have this time when you can focus on yourself and your own neuroses at times. Does that go by the wayside when you have kids? Because that's the part of that makes me not want to have kids. I like to lie around all day and feel sorry for myself.
I mean, I think that was like the best part of having kids, was what my vision expanded.
Yeah.
Like, I was so myopic, and I still can be, like, when I think about myself and my music and my career.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very much this like weird space to get in, but you know, as soon as I had a kid, it was like, boom, I have to keep you alive. Like,
yeah.
And it really just like, I don't know. It was like all of a sudden just having a huge wide angle lens open up on the world and the universe and my life, and to know that I was, it was a real relief, actually. It's really nice not to be thinking about yourself all the time.
Yeah,
it is. I have to say, that's actually been one of the best gifts of motherhood, is like, I mean, not that it's funny. I really don't want to like say, like make this out to where like you have to have a kid because it's like the best thing ever. Well, you're a better person without a kid. But it's like, it just changes your perspective.
Does.
And it really, you know, yeah, you aren't thinking about yourself all the time. And that's kind of cool. And it kind of offers some different things creatively to your music or your art, I think. It gets you thinking about other things. I swear, I sit out in the mornings and I rock Lulu and I like have a million like song ideas come to me that would never have come to me if I wasn't a mother. Granted, I probably would have had different song ideas,
right.
But you know, and like, it's just bizarre. When I came home from the hospital, it's so funny. I don't know if it's probably had a lot to do with the hormones and the endorphins, but I swear it was also like the first week of spring and everything was like brighter and more vivid and like more detailed. And it's like literally this switch happens where I think you see the world completely differently, you know, like how could you not, I guess, you know? And so it's going to affect everything you do, from your art to whatever, how you are as a person. So
I just remembered, Kyle Ellison one time told me that Doug Somm said to him, years and years ago, a quote was, that you're never as successful as you can be until you have kids. And I don't know, you know, there might have been more to that quote, but I always kind of like carried that with me, you know? And
yeah, it also gives you like, it's kind of like you've got a mouth to feed, you know? So you kind of also like monetarily kind
of
have to think about, how am I going to put food on the table a little bit more? And it gives you a little bit more, I feel like it gives me a little bit more motivation to like get my ass in gear, you know?
That's
like
good.
Like I could, you know, when I didn't have a kid, I'd just sit around maybe and do nothing all day, you know? Granted, I never really did that, but I would be less inclined to like work. And now it's like, okay, she's asleep for 3 hours. I'm going to go try to like book some stuff or write a song or make your time matters so much more.
Yeah. Although
I'm
super impressed that you're like into the thing. I lost all creative drive with both
well,
my kids.
That's
for like,
we can talk about that too.
18 months.
Yeah.
Like I didn't care. I mean, I played music because I was in the wheel and we were on the road, but like I didn't care about writing music. I didn't care about making music. I didn't care anything about it.
But may I say something?
Yes.
You're making up for it like tenfold.
I was
going to
say you're creative.
I mean,
because
I was
going to
say, yeah, that would be an inspiration to me if I were in Susanna's shoes. Like, I mean, you've got more than one musical project. You've got a you know, a shitload
of
output.
Absolutely. And your kids are like in school, which is actually kind of a hard, like, to me, I feel like it's almost harder when your kids get into school because they need more of you. Like babies, I guess it's kind of like, you know, babies are demanding in their own way, but she's, you know, she sleeps a lot. She's not talking. She's not walking. She's not like, you know, talking back to me and saying no, as we were talking about earlier. But so I'm like really in awe of you and hope that I can keep my creative fire going when like she gets to that age, you know,
well,
that your
I
kids
feel
are
like
at
it's
now.
It's easier when the older that they get. I mean, they become more their own people and they're at school, so I can get stuff done.
That's
during
true.
The day.
That's true, but still.
But yeah, I mean, I think the older that they get, it's like they need you less, which is sometimes very bittersweet because I feel
sure.
like I'm just at the point, especially with my 6-year-old, where I can see the end of her needing me. Uh-huh, like I can yeah. see the her walking two steps in front of me. It's not there yet, but I yeah. she goes to elementary school, and those 6th graders are like,
you just killed Savannah.
6th graders. So I know. I mean, I feel like now I'm just trying to like, oh my god, like trying to grab as much of this time as I can because I know that
sure,
like it's really limited. And
before
you know,
you're embarrassing them.
Before
and they,
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah,
before
yeah,
I don't,
yeah.
you know, before she's like, mom, like, please yeah. don't. I have friends who have older kids, but still in elementary school who, like, their kids don't want them to, like, hold their hands in the aww. Hall and stuff. And it's like, oh.
Yeah,
see,
I've got a.
It's heartbreaking. I'm going to cry my eyes out when that happens.
I've got a little dose of perspective there because I do have two, call them my bonus kids. Essentially my stepchildren. And so Zachary is 11 and Ava is 12. So that's 5th and 6th grade. And this is, it's middle school. I mean, it's full on and everything's socially is happening a lot younger and they've got social media,
yeah.
their fingertips. And so I'm getting a perspective of what that looks like. And, you know, I'm not fulfilling a parental role for them entirely, but I'm there
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a little bit on the sidelines but involved.
Yeah, totally.
And
yeah.
and then I've got Charlie who's 3 and a half and he's just started a little school program this year, you know, kind of. So we're like baby stepping our way in there, and I feel like I can see like, oh my, you know, down the road a piece. But I wanted to say I can relate to what you said. When I was pregnant, it was like the creative juices, and we were still going to Nashville. We had a publishing deal, so we were going to right. Nashville it mm-hmm. like consistently to write and set up with these co-writes, and it was like everything just went boom, just shut down like creatively. I don't know what it honestly I still am like curious if there's a physical
like
aspect
a hormonal,
of that a hormonal
yeah.
thing, because I felt like all of my creative energy was going into making this baby. I
yeah.
mean honestly, you know, and trying to kind of shift my world even on just a spiritual level, like into this motherhood and in this role. So I mean creatively I couldn't write the whole time I was pregnant. I think I started a few things and it's been a slow roll. Even like after Charlie's been born, I've felt creative. But the other thing is that you can't always, when you have an idea or when you feel inspired, sometimes you don't have the ability to sit down and like go, oh, I just had this melody.
Right.
Or I just had this idea. You can't sit down and work on it right in that moment. So
because
that's,
you can't be a slave to the muse anymore.
Say,
you've
yeah,
got.
the voice memo thing on the iPhone.
Oh,
has,
voice
is like
memos.
The savior for me. Like,
yes.
Get it down and then like, okay, and now I'm going to get you a glass of milk. Yeah.
Right. And so
yeah.
whenever you do have those little windows of time that you value so much.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's,
my voice memos are
so,
full.
And there's been moments where I'm like, okay, I scheduled this co-write. I've got this 2-hour window. And then you're trying to like force this to happen in that 2 hours because that's all you have. And you know that's all you have
yeah.
for a week or yeah. whatever. And then there's a lot of pressure around that time. And sometimes it's just not organic, you know. So... So that's been a real challenge for me and something that probably we could talk about. And that goes with, I mean, so many lines of careers and, you know, any kind of creative.
Yeah, but it seems like definitely in a creative thing where it takes some sort of a little bit more. Because if you had a job where you went somewhere and you, look out, you're going to get a, yeah. I don't want to, let's move that. This is really going to hurt somebody here.
You have like a very...
Well, I don't normally have people squatting over my flutes and and drumsticks. I have a question that I was watching this show last night about animal babies and their parents and how they are raised from when they're born to when they some of them go off on their own, some of them don't. But there's so many instincts that kick in from the time the animals get pregnant, but then there are more that kick in even if you don't know. There are animal instincts that are in our DNA makeup that you do these things. Are you cognizant of those things kicking in when they're happening? You're like, oh, now all of a sudden I feel the need to do this. You know what I mean? And you know what I'm saying?
I feel like I had a baby and then I looked in the mirror and I was like, I do not recognize you, woman in the mirror. Like all these things had switched on after I had a baby where it was like, I was super protective.
Yeah.
And I had all these like really like, it's a real struggle with your partner too, to figure out how to do it. Like I'd be like, you're doing it wrong. Like, don't you know that this is how the baby likes it? Like,
because the man doesn't have instincts that kick in.
It took my husband a really long time to really
realize
get into
he had
it.
Kids. No, I'm just
at about 14, at about 14 months, you know, he was like, oh, I get it. It's really fun. And I was like, what do you mean? It's been fun the whole time.
I mean, I can imagine it can be terrifying, especially in the life that we live where all of a sudden there's just this level of freedom. I mean, we have to be somewhere for sound check and then for our gig, but people are there to see us. So it's not really like we have to be somewhere like a job, you know, and then all of a sudden your whole life revolves around something that's not you or that stuff anymore. And I can imagine that can be shocking, especially when those instincts don't kick in. So
yeah, when
did
it
you
didn't
feel
grow
any instincts kick
months.
In, Susanna?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Any, like, where you're like, oh, my God, this is like, my body is doing this thing without me even telling it to, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, mentally, too, I feel I mean, there would be times when I'd be on stage and I'd just feel whatever it was. Like, I would be thinking of Charlie or, and whatever, and this is a little, maybe, too much information.
No,
but,
there's never
but,
too much.
But, right after that, my milk would come in, and I'd be like, wherever he is, he's hungry. And then I'd have my phone on stage. I had this little rack, which is awesome. You should get it, but it's you just hook it to your mic stand. Anyway, that was like key for me so I could have my phone right there.
And you could
whoever
see him?
Had him. Yeah. And they could text me and say, okay, he's hungry. We're doing the bottle,
That's
whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I was just, you're very,
you're in tune
with
that. With that, yeah.
And not every mom experiences that, but definitely dads have more of a struggle.
Yeah. Jazz, you've said nothing this whole time.
I know. Jazz has been rocking my baby,
and
so now I'm nursing her.
I'm the closest. Your baby is the one I'm most friends with. I, in fact, have a painting I can see from right here that's on my fridge that she made me.
Aww.
A watercolor.
I think like one of the most one of the most like in tune moments I had with Ava was this time that I got her to take a nap and was able to like take a nap too the same day, which never happens. And there were some other people at my house that were just hanging out downstairs where by Ava's room, and I was asleep upstairs, and all of a sudden I heard this like extremely loud crash where it was super loud. Like it sounded like an entire window of ours had been smashed or something. It was so loud. And as soon as the noise happened, Ava started screaming. And so I thought something had happened in her room, or like her fan had fallen out of the ceiling or something. But the scream wasn't like she had had a bad dream, or it wasn't, she was sick. It really sounded like something had impaled her or something. And so I run downstairs, I run into her room, I look around, I pick her up. She's screaming, but she's fine. Or I'm kind of putting my hands all over her body to see if something like internally is happening, but I can't find anything in her room that was broken. And then I go out of her room into the living room, and three of my friends are sitting there on the couch. And I was like, what was that? And they're like, what was what? And I was like, what's the noise? What was the noise? And they were like, yeah. And none of them had heard that.
Right.
They didn't. It was like either a dream me and Ava had had, or a dream that only I had had, and she felt my emotion all of a sudden and was scared too. But the other thing that was crazy is like getting from my bed to her room took like 2 seconds somehow. I literally like flew down the stairs into her room.
Mama
and
power.
That's, yeah, that's like one of the craziest animalistic things that has come to me, that is something that happens without my control that I'm not consciously doing, but I am
to protect
stronger and faster than I knew I was, because when it's a moment like that, you don't even think about like I'm tired or my knee hurts or running is boring or
right. running is boring. Or like
oh my god, that's why I love jazz. It, running is boring.
I mean, I had to one time it was raining and like our car was parked really far away and I didn't have an umbrella and like Ava couldn't even crawl yet and I couldn't put her down because it was raining and she couldn't, you know, walk or anything, and I had to carry her for a really long time, plus her baby bag, plus all the things that I had bought. Like the way it had worked out, I had totally miscalculated what I was gonna have to do. And I was carrying so much weight and I had to carry it for like 4 miles or something, and
in the rain.
And at one point I was like having that Kill Bill moment where like she had to find her zen and like bust out of the coffin, and I was like, I can do this, I can do this, like people have had to do this, and but people have, you know, walked hundreds of miles with their children before to like escape danger and things like this, like I can do it, my car is right over there, I can do it. And like to feel my body and the adrenaline take over where I was like all of a sudden I couldn't feel the weight anymore and you're faster and whatever, and it's all just because you know that you don't have a choice, you can't put your kid down, you have to just keep holding her.
And there are those weird documented stories, like what made the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, dose himself with gamma rays was that he couldn't lift a car off of his wife when there was like a lady that lifted, you know, a 2-ton truck off of a, you know, up so that she could get her kid out of there and stuff. Right.
My grandmother lifted a motorcycle off my grandfather when she was like 70 something.
Wow.
Just
took it off of him.
Amazing.
Like, I was going to say that story and I had totally forgotten about this, but there was, when Charlie was about maybe 4 months old, I had to go to New York for a screening of, there was a film that I had a part in that was screening at Tribeca Film Festival. So I went, and Charlie was maybe 4 or 5 months old. He was little. And my mother-in-law went with me. And the hotel that we were staying in, and this was the night, the screening had happened, and then we went home to the hotel. And it was late at night that night. And the hotel we were staying in had the fire alarm went off, and we were on the like 17th floor in Times Square, and the fire, I mean, it was such a similar feeling where, I mean, I was in the room, my mother-in-law was in the lobby on her computer, and I think the lights started blinking in the room, and then it was right before the sirens went off or something. And Charlie was laying on the bed. He was awake, I think. And I mean, I don't even remember doing this, but scooped him up and walked outside and was at the elevators like within 2 seconds and was standing there. And all these people started flooding out of their rooms. And then we had to walk down 17 flights of stairs. I was barefoot in my pajamas.
Yeah.
It was cold. Yeah. I had him like wrapped in my sweater and walked down that 17 flights of stairs and then got outside and went around, you know, the whole building in Times Square barefoot, like freezing cold.
Yeah.
And then got in the lobby and it all was fine. And we got in and, you know, eventually got back into our room. And that happened 3 more times that night.
Oh, my.
And he was awesome. And there was one point when I had to just put him on, you know, my poop and let him nurse while I'm walking the 17 flights of stairs. And I'm trying to, like, calm other people down. Like, it felt like Titanic or something.
Right, right.
You know, like, I'm calming down these other children that are looking for their parents. And I've got Charlie, you know.
Yeah.
And I just did it. And I actually was kind of, like, happily doing it. You know, which was bizarre.
It gives you kind of like
just,
this amazing purpose or something. I think you feel this kind of like, sorry.
Oh, no,
this, I was telling someone the other day, like how I feel like my life just has this like.
It has purpose.
Awesome purpose. Yeah. Like now, I remember hearing people say that before I had a kid and I was like, oh God, like that's such BS. Like your life has purpose with or without a child. And it does. It's just, it's so hard to explain. You know, like once you have a baby, it's like. Yeah. You just feel like your job is to protect and love and nourish this other human being. And you just didn't do that before, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
You know what gets me is I come from a Latin family, and like the ladies in my family are pretty intense and they really worry a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that I have that too. Which makes me think this morning when I got up and I saw this thing on the news, I thought about you guys were coming in, and I was like, well, here's this thing that happened in Waco where people were just eating at a restaurant. Like, I didn't have like immediate fear, but I know like my grandma would probably be like, I don't know if you eat at this place, but don't ever go there. You know, like, do you have that kind of thing? Like, does that, when you see something like that now, being a parent, does it affect you more than it affected me watching it this morning on the news?
I don't know what we're talking about.
There was a shooting
at
in
Twin
Waco,
Peaks
like
restaurant?
A gang fight, like a motorbike gang.
It was like, I think nine people died.
Yeah. This is why I don't watch the
was
news.
Was this yesterday? I drove through Waco yesterday. Yeah.
It was crazy.
I mean, I feel like the thing that you come to realize, and maybe a little bit, I realized this with my partner, but then with my baby, I was just talking about this with my sister the other day about how like, your definition of love becomes like way expanded and way deeper. But then you also realize that like allowing yourself to love another being this way makes you incredibly vulnerable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if anything were to happen to my kids, I'm pretty sure that I would break. Like I would actually
I would go insane.
Break.
Yeah.
And I imagine, as a parent, even as they get older and they're not as vulnerable as they are when they're like Lulu's size, you still see that vulnerability in them. So you do
absolutely.
Worry throughout their lives.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, and
well,
I think
and it, you're more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably
I can't
worse.
Watch the news.
I can't.
I just
since
can't
becoming
do it
a parent,
anymore
I will
since
say like
having Charlie.
I remember like when she was 2 or 3 weeks old, it was the anniversary of the Nigerian girls being taken, like abducted.
Yeah.
And I was just bawling my eyes out listening to NPR, and I had to change it. I was like, there's nothing I can do. Those parents, they just must feel just beside themselves with grief, like not knowing where their daughters are. And I if anything like that happened to Lulu, I would just lose it. I don't know. Like it's,
sure. And
I think what you were saying, it doesn't make you just more like loving towards this child. I feel like I'm more loving in general to human beings now.
Everybody's somebody's baby.
Everyone's somebody's baby. It's like I look at everyone, even the most despicable human being, who I normally may be like, that guy's an asshole or whatever. And now, sorry, can I say that? Yeah, exactly.
Like you look at me.
Whatever. Never. But I'm like, no, you know what? Yeah, he's somebody's kid and his mama loves him. And
empathy.
Yeah, empathy.
Yeah, yeah, and that's been a real, like, something even in my doula work, too, that I've had to, like, keep in check is making sure that I'm protecting myself and not being overly empathic, you know, because that's a tendency that I have. But watching the news and things that come up, you know, current events, and the second that a kid's picture pops up on the screen, I'm like, turn it off. I can't. I mean, the stories stick with me, you know,
sure.
And
it's hard.
It is difficult. I don't know that I become more like paranoid about the world necessarily. But, you know, I'm on, you know, all your senses are going.
Yeah.
If you've got your kid in an unfamiliar environment, you know, or you're having to get through a crowd or something, then, yeah.
Well, then, I mean, don't you guys ever think about the positions that we put ourselves in at ages
that
we probably shouldn't have been in those situations? Like,
oh
do you
God.
Go
I
like, okay,
I'm,
she's never going to leave the house.
A friend of mine, I saw her adult son driving down the road on his scooter without his helmet on. And I was like, I saw him and I was like, you need to ride your scooter with your helmet on. I don't even know what your mama thinks, but like, yeah, I see that stuff and it's like, oh, and you know, it's coming. Like all our kids are going to be teenagers at some point and they're not going to understand the impact of their decisions. Do you have something to say, Jazz? You look like you did.
I just, going back to your original question about being a worrier, I'm not at all a worrier. It's something that it's a very toxic feeling for me that when I start to worry, immediately try and put it into perspective and stop. And it's difficult for me to function if I'm worried about things that I know that I ultimately can't do anything about anyway. So I'm kind of wasting all of my energy worrying about it. And like, I think that I have to, there are times where you see something on news or you hear something and it's almost, it's it, it feels, makes me feel nauseous to have the love that I have for my kid and the reality of what's happening to some people's children and other places in the same headspace. It makes me feel terrible and helpless and horrible that that's happening. But I feel like one of the ways that I've had to, I want that. To me, the hardest thing as a mother is like how you want your child to be well-rounded. You want them to be, don't be afraid of the world. Don't be naive. I want you to be confident, but don't be cocky. Mm-hmm. I want you to be strong, but you also should be gentle. Mm-hmm. You should be patient. You should speak your mind. You should listen. Like, you have to try and tell your kid that they've got to be some, a little bit of all of it if they can be, and that you want them to be smart, and you know that ultimately that doesn't matter at the same time, and that they should be a good person, right, and blah, blah, blah. And like it, and I always tell Ava with like, with the street, you know, I'm like, remember the street, Ava. This is like a good, like analogy of the world. You have to be careful with the street. There are cars in the street that maybe don't see you. That car could hurt you. But you also don't have to be afraid of the street. It's not something that you have to look at and be afraid to walk towards or walk along. You know, like, yeah, but you have to be aware that that is a street and that you could get hurt if you're not paying attention to it, you know? And yeah, so it's like, yeah, there are dangers in the world, and we are, there's danger all around that we don't see, you know, like we could walk outside and a tree could fall and land on me. Like, mm-hmm, there's all kinds of things that can happen to you in life. So you can be somewhat aware of dangers, like, hey, Ava, don't walk down dark alleys by yourself. Ever,
right,
no matter how old you are, just don't do it. And yeah, like, trust your instincts and things like that. But on the other hand, it's like, I feel like people who put so much worry and fear in their children about, and making sure they know about the dangers of the world and these horrible things, yeah, that are happening to these kids or whatever, it's like, you're crippling them. They're, yeah, never going to be able to, it's like, even attempt,
yeah,
right, anything.
I feel that way too, yeah.
There's these horrible things lingering in their
well,
head.
Well, and I, yeah, think a lot of what people are doing now is they're not saying, like, they're giving those kids, their kids, like, that message in a different way by, like, totally... And it's hard to know what to do as a parent, but like, kids, it ain't like it was when we were kids. They don't get to go like ride their bike around the neighborhood and explore the woods anymore.
Oh, right. Like, I would get up in the morning before even my mom. And like, even when I lived in Mexico, when I lived in California, not when I lived in like the center of Houston, I didn't have the freedom then that I did. Sure. But then I lived in the woodlands afterwards, and I had the same freedom. It was like, basically like,
go. See you later. Like,
free reign.
You came back by dark.
Yeah, totally.
And that was it.
And I really, like,
I mean,
I really,
that's a different, it is a different world like
that. I question releasing a bunch of young adults into the world who haven't been exploring the world on their own in some capacity since they were young kids, because, like you were talking about, it's like a learned behavior to know, like, to be aware, but to not be scared, but to explore, but to, like, kind of trust yourself. Right.
Also, like, I had this conversation with Darren Murphy the other day, who's a dad. I had it on the show because we were both raised in kind of, like, that hippie kind of thing where I know that I went on beer runs on the back of somebody's motorcycle when they had been drinking with, like, no shoes on and no helmet. You know
what
I mean? Like,
right, totally. Yeah.
Riding in the back of trucks
and
all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And,
like, when I was a kid, my grandfather was a doctor. I used to go make rounds with him, and his little cardiogram reading room was right next to the emergency room. And I would play with my little Batman action figures outside of the emergency room. And one day there was a man screaming, and there was all this craziness going on in triage. And my grandfather picks me up and takes me to a window, and there's a man screaming with no skin on one side of his body. I'm about 4.5 years old, and he goes, you see this man rides a motorcycle. You don't ever ride motorcycle.
Wow.
And that was it. But, like, people don't do that to kids anymore. You know what I mean? He also was a doctor. He saw me with bare feet. My feet were black, and he asked me why my feet were black, and I said because I had gone with my aunt to 7-Eleven, and I didn't wear shoes. And he said, when you walk around outside with no shoes on, worms go in your feet. And I literally can't walk outside because I have this horrible feeling of worms going in my feet.
He either scarred you or protected you for life.
A little bit of both, maybe. But, like, I mean, those kind of freedoms are kind of gone.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think that it's all just in, I think it's the way that the world is presented to children, and that's it. Because I think that adults even have to be reminded, constantly reminded, that the world has been dangerous since the beginning, and that yes, some things have gotten more dangerous since lots of things have changed, and aesthetically the world has changed, and we have new technologies, and there are things that are dangerous about that, but the world has been dangerous the whole time. Every single generation had a doomsday. Sure. Every single generation thought that it was the worst and that it was going to be the end.
There's
and
a lot
that,
of
and
things,
like
yeah.
that's not and that's in my and that's just my opinion, but that's not the case, you know. And like, even women specifically, 100 years ago, you know, you had a 50% chance of dying giving birth, you know,
right,
like
right.
a 50% chance that you would die giving birth. And like, personally, yes, there are certain things about our world that I'm not stoked on in our generation. I'm really happy that I never went into giving birth thinking I could die.
You were going to die. I know.
Was
just I was
like,
thinking about
I mean,
that
at
too,
one
yeah.
point I did think that I was going to die.
Right, I think we all like, think we're going to die at some point in it. But yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think people, for some reason, like to, they're so enamored with their current generation that they forget that, like, we have a lot of things to be thankful for, that, like, we have a lot of things to be thankful for as far as the way that we have progressed as well.
Sure.
You know? And
there are a lot of crime rates that are better now than they were even 20 years ago. And, I mean,
but we've, as humans, have been making mistakes for a long time and been doing really well for a long time. You know? And I think that what happens a lot of times is because the news is so shitty and like
so bad.
That's all they show you, and nobody wants to share a blog about like something really beautiful and miraculous happening in their life. They just, everybody reposts terrible things, and so it's really difficult to remind people that like there are things like that happening in the world. But I go outside every single day, and I'm not consciously searching for things that are beautiful. They're just literally everywhere. There's nice people all over the place. There's cool things happening all over the place. I'm not imagining that or pretending like it's happening. It's like I meet cool people who do cool things all the time. They just don't get recognition for it. You know, like even going outside and seeing like a new flower, you know, it's like, oh, and I saw a documentary the other day about this new species of a hybrid between a wolf and a coyote called a coy wolf, and they're like, they're evolving because they're trying to urbanize themselves because they're running out of land, and we're expanding so much into their territory.
They need to rely on humans.
And I'm like, but that's inspiring to me, you know, like
awesome. But there's an adaptability out there,
and that
in life,
and that everybody, and like the animals are doing it too, you know, like I think it's really important to me for Ava and for kids, all the kids that are in my life, to explain to them that like, because I have some, there are some kids in my life whose parents are big worriers, and I can see how paralyzed they are in public. Mm-hmm. You know, they just cannot cope with being outside of their home. And to me, that is so tragic, because I'm like, oh my God, like you can't even see, you know, like you literally can't see it because you're
sheltered so from it.
Yeah. There's like,
and there's no way to learn if you stay, you know, if you stay indoors all the time and are sheltered, you know.
I've been waiting for somebody to start a news broadcast that's the good news.
I know. I think
like
so.
All the good news.
I feel like Jazz should be the anchor for it, because I every time I go to your Facebook page, Jazz, I'm like, yes, it's like the good news of the day, you know? It's like, thank you for sharing your interaction with
a homeless man
or whatever.
Well, there's also non-sensationalized news. Like that. I mean, there are news sources that don't come on and go like, something in your kitchen can kill you after this. You know what I mean?
Air.
Your children cannot go outside because of, we'll tell you in just a minute. Like
right,
at 10 o'clock.
They're
just trying to sell Cheetos or something.
Totally.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's all just trying to sell you
what,
soap.
What, here's a question is like, how old are your kids? You said six,
four and six.
Four and six. Okay. Does one of them have a phone yet?
Oh,
I mean,
no.
When does that happen?
No, well, their third grandfather for Christmas wanted to get them tablets, which wasn't really my, you know, it's like he wanted to get it for them. So they've each got these little like tablets, and I just created a Spotify playlist for my daughter because she really
that's
wanted
awesome.
A Spotify playlist.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. What age, like, you know, when I was a kid, again, I don't ever want it to seem like I wasn't parented. But I was one of those kids that was in, I'm pretty sure you were probably in the same thing, like a kid at a, you know, at a bar with other kids playing in a corner.
Sure.
You know, there was those kind of, you know, and it wasn't like some people that maybe grew up in the suburbs are like, oh my God, that's crazy. But to me, it was very normal. And it obviously had some kind of effect on our lives that we're out
sure.
doing what we saw people doing when we were kids.
Yeah.
And it's like a normal way of life. But like as far as like the social, like how soon do they get to know this kind of, do you expose them like to music? Like what kind of, do you shield them from music that might have strange messages? Like,
I probably should. But like my daughter is in a dual language program, and so we listen to the Spanish pop channel all the time.
Oh yeah.
And there's a song about like it's like I wanna rock with somebody. I wanna do shots with somebody. I wanna go home with somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that song. Yeah, yeah.
So I mean it's playing on the Spanish language pop channel, and I let my kids listen to it, and my oldest daughter started singing it, and I was like, that's maybe inappropriate that you know all the words to that song.
But also
or
you
maybe
should
not.
It's a good chance to tell her about plagiarism, because that sounds very much like a Whitney Houston song.
I played her I Want to Dance with Somebody thinking that maybe she would like it more than that song, and she did not, which was a little disappointing. But
that's
funny. I mean, I don't know, like I kind of feel like you should let kids kind of find it on their own.
Yeah,
you know, like
right
find
well, the thing is also they're
going
to go to school and they're going to find stuff out from other
kids.
That's totally crazy. And like I always think about when I was a kid, no one stopped me from listening to Kiss. But I mean, I look back on it now. And when I was 7, one of my favorite songs, the opening line is stick your hand into my pocket and grab onto my rocket.
Yeah, but you didn't
feel
so
good to see you again. Yeah, I knew what it meant.
Okay. Okay.
I mean,
Yeah,
I mean that was Kiss isn't great at like hiding the metaphors. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what's interesting though? So I have like Savannah. I'm kind of a step parent too. My my partner has a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, and it's funny because sometimes I watch them. They're always on their phones. They definitely have iPhones and they're constantly on them, and it annoys me a little bit. Of course, every now and then I look around and both me and my partner are on our phones too. So they're probably just reflecting. But at the same time, like they're both, I've realized recently, like they're not that into like pop culture. They basically use their phones to like, they're really into like sports. Like they love the Spurs and NBA. So I think they have these NBA games they play and they follow stats and they look up funny stuff on YouTube. But they're pretty good at like, what's the word? Kind of like self-regulation. Like they don't look up really anything inappropriate, you know. They don't know a lot about certain pop culture things that I would expect them to, because they're just not seeking it out. So it kind of made me realize, I'm like, you know what? They're just good kids. They've learned from good parents, and so I think they're not using their technology for bad things. You know what I'm saying?
What it
like
comes
they're
down to
yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's
yeah.
like. If I give Ava an iPad and I'm like, here, put this in your room, have at it.
Sure.
That's very different than me being like, here, Ava, this has like,
stuff
this is numbers, sign language, shapes, colors, music, and, you know, stories. And sure, have at it. Like, sometimes people will be like, oh my gosh, like, how does Ava know that many that many signs? And I'm like, she learned it on my iPad, you know? And like, realistically, totally. I can't sit down with Ava every day and go over all of the signs with her. But I think it's brilliant that she was able to get into it and learn on an iPad. And so like, that's, some people, when they see Ava on an iPad, they're immediately like, ugh. Like, look at that mom. She just doesn't even care. And look at that kid on technology. Or they'll say things like, I don't let my kids watch TV, or we don't have a movie or do movies in our house. I'm like, that's cool. That's great. I totally respect that and understand that too. I grew up in a house that didn't have a microwave, didn't have a TV. Like and I loved it.
Yeah.
None of that was in our household, and it was. But at the same time, my mom facilitated that experience with lots of different people coming in all the time. She kept me busy. But with Ava, it's like, you know, I started touring again when she was 6 weeks old, and then decided that I wanted to stay home with her. And then that turned into like, I can't really stay home with her. I have to work. And then she's going to have to come with me to the studio, and she's going to have to come with me to this meeting, and she's going to have to come with me to this. Or it just got more and more lame for her. And like, and you can't always just be like, here, like just color on this, you know, because that doesn't stimulate them.
Yeah,
any
they're always
either.
Doing the
you're
same thing.
You're pacifying them,
right.
Like,
you know,
a lot
like,
of
it looks better. Yeah. It aesthetically looks better to see a kid doing arts and crafts in the corner, but like they don't need to do arts and crafts all the time, you know, or
yeah,
like,
what if they're not into arts and crafts? Yeah, maybe they want to, like, do some math, or
and
maybe
the fact that Ava can, like, one time when somebody Ava wasn't talking very well yet, I could understand her, but like it was harder for other people to understand what she was saying. And somebody came up to Ava and they said, "Hey Ava, like, I love your pink dress. Is pink your favorite?" They said, "What's your favorite color?" And Ava signed pink to them, but she couldn't say it, but she signed pink. And then the person looked at me and was like, "Oh, she's not talking yet." And I was like, she responded to you. Like,
yeah,
she actually knows more languages
yeah.
than you do.
Right.
You know, right. Like, yeah. Ava is bilingual and you just can't understand her. And
sure.
I think that, like, technology can be a bad thing. And if technology is a bad thing in your kid's life, it's your fault. It's not technology's
Absolutely.
Fault.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
it's your job to teach your children, like,
yeah.
how to
yeah.
use
and to
tools.
Try and pretend like that's not something they're going to experience is crippling.
It's part,
as
it's
well
part of
for
our
your
lives.
Kid to
yeah.
like, you can't even go buy a taco without them being like, "Okay, let me just flip this screen around.
Right.
And if you'll sign this," like, if a kid's never seen
yeah.
anything like that, they can't do anything.
Totally. Every generation has their, like, you know, when we were kids, it was like, I didn't grow up with, like, a Nintendo. I mean, I loved playing it at my friends' houses and stuff, but, you know, it's like, all my friends who grew up playing video games, they're not damaged people, you know? If anything,
right.
some of those video games probably taught them some, whatever, some interesting things that they, I don't know.
If they come across a room full of zombies, they can
yes.
fight them with just a chainsaw.
Exactly. If they come across a brick, they will bump it with their head and a mushroom will come out. It's amazing.
I will say, yeah, just in, to kind of just, you know, yeah, I agree with what Jazz is saying. Right now, that's something that's really a part of our world, because and something I've been working on and balancing and trying to, like, just go, like, what are good apps? Like, I don't even know. Like, how do I find mm-hmm. you know, asking other friends, like, what are some good ones? How in because Charlie all of a sudden, I mean, without our influence, became really obsessed with learning his letters. Like, and the alphabet and learning letters. And so I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm kind of following his lead in that way. And felt like I was like a slacker as a parent, because I didn't see that, or I didn't introduce him to that. But he was introduced to that through through something on the iPad, through an app that we have. And when we're in the car, you know, I mean, when we're at home, there's other ways, you know, that I can
right.
work with him,
but
on
in
his
the car.
Letters and, like, puzzles and little things where he can, like, turn it over and go, oh, B is for balloon or whatever. But when we're in the car, he doesn't have that ability. I can't put a, you know, he's got books, you know, so we do a lot of books in the car, or
right.
you know, that kind of thing. Or we do a lot of, you know, we just started doing, like, audio storytelling,
uh-huh.
like audio books, uh-huh. kid books and stuff, which he loves. But but yeah, I mean, that, like, a tablet and technology allows us to be able to, you know, like, help him with his interests in ways that we
right.
wouldn't be able to, or places
yeah.
that we wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Sure, it's like whatever our parents went through when we were getting cable and stuff. Like, how do I
That's
keep
what I'm
this
saying.
Kid
yeah,
from watching
exactly.
MTV all day,
and, you know,
or, like,
let's
staying
not,
up late and watching the cinema?
Right.
Let's not
right.
act like we're just struggling to figure this out for our kids. I mean, we're all struggling
totally.
To figure out our relationship with
point.
Technology and how much am I on my phone and how much am I on my TV. And, you know, and I think our kids are going to grow up with that too. And so we might as well let them have it, but then have conversations about it. I mean, now my kids are old enough where we can kind of talk about, like, screen time and,
right.
you know, not wanting to be just, like, a consumer, but also be a creator.
Right.
So how do you balance, like, what you're taking in with what you're putting out?
Yeah, that's a great
question. How do you balance this? Because this is going to be a weird question, but, like, you just did this performance, the Infinity Plus Infinity.
Right.
And you had some very realistic songs about maintaining
oh, yeah.
a relationship with their dad.
Yeah.
Do they know these songs or what they're about or anything?
Yeah,
or did you
I
have
mean,
to explain it and go, like, you know what? It's not all peaches and cream.
Well, I mean, I don't think they quite get all the songs. There is one song that I wrote up, like, about them that's the least ambivalent song. And so I'll be like, hey, guys, you want to hear the song that's
yeah.
about you? And I
yeah.
think, but I'm open to talking about it with them when they do understand what's going on. I
yeah.
mean, I definitely talk to their dad a lot about it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one thing is, like, kind of, you know, trying to, like you were saying, Jazz, give your kids a nuanced version of the world. Like,
you know, like it's not all good. I make a lot of mistakes. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. Sometimes you're going to do the wrong thing. Sometimes I do the wrong thing. Like, let's talk about how we get through life when it's not going to be great all the time. Like,
yeah.
You know,
have they ever told you they don't like a song?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically it's like I'll be doing stuff and they'll be like, Mom, put the guitar down.
Oh,
like,
man.
Just, I mean, it's not like I don't like the song. It's just like, I don't want to hear your thing right now, Mom. Like, I want to do my thing, or I want to do something with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a one-sided thing when you're doing your music. And
yeah. If I'm ever like, I hear about people who are like, I practice around my kid, and I'm like, oh, that sounds so great. So I'll like break out the guitar. Like, okay, guys, I'm just going to practice for my gig coming up. And they're like, oh, they put their
boring
hands in their ears. And like,
Charlie just
over, try to play
up
the guitar.
I don't like
with
that
it.
Song.
Yeah.
I don't like that song. Play, and then he like, it's request hour at that point.
Right,
like,
right. No, you're playing, I mean, for him. Yeah, giving just, him a concert.
Yeah.
Are your kids into One Direction?
Not yet. They not haven't yet. Quite gotten into like boy bands.
Ava into was. Lots of direction.
Ava was. She's Ava out. Was? She's out on them now. Kind of basically. Yeah. I mean, she'd go see them in concert. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she was way in. I mean, we had Harry Styles on the wall. Like. Yeah. The whole thing.
I mean,
whole
I would
deal.
Have Harry Styles on the wall. He's a cutie.
You know what's weird? I was bummed when she took down the poster. Man. I was come on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, this is a total aside, but I read this thing on Flipboard where, you know, Zayn left One Direction because he wanted to live the life of a normal 22-year-old.
No way.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a solo record coming out.
He wants to live, but he wants to live the life of a normal 22-year-old. And then they asked, they asked Noel Gallagher from Oasis, like, what do you think of this guy leaving and saying, because he wants to live the life of a normal 22-year-old. And he was like, has he ever seen the life of a normal 22-year-old? It's terrible.
It
You're poor.
It
this guy's
sucks.
Like a millionaire. He can like go out with anyone he wants. Like, what is his problem?
Right.
That's have you awesome. Heard the, I mean, this is another One Direction aside, sorry. But there's a podcast called Reply All. Did you know that there's a whole One Direction thing where like a lot of One Direction fans think that two of the members are in love with each other?
Oh no!
But wow. That one of them has
that's
a girlfriend, and the girlfriend is like made up, like a made up girlfriend,
like
and so they're
made
always
up
trying
beard.
To like track
yeah.
down
big
the
beard.
Made up
that's
girlfriend.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like this One Direction gossip. This is awesome.
Yeah. What?
Should we get back? Should we get back on track?
Back to yeah, I know. Sorry. Yes, Savannah really
Savannah's
should be co-hosting.
Like, hey, listen, man.
I'm like, I'll just talk all day about all kinds of crap, whatever.
I love it.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't need to take the stage here, but
no.
In terms of just how,
right.
no, just I
whoever's
mean,
holding the baby.
Yeah,
that's
talking
the
about
yeah, the floor.
I'd say probably like in just in talking about how to balance a musical career and mothering your children the way that you want to. I mean, so many of those tips and things that I thought of leading up to this can go along with a mother in a lot of lines of work.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But one thing that I know, I mean, I was really grateful for was that we actually could take our kids to work with us. We could.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, it's not super awesome for them and pretty lame most of the time. But when
you have that option, which is cool.
Yeah. And we started touring again when Charlie was 6 weeks too. And I found it was a lot easier actually when he was little. And there were things about the way that I chose to parent that were also right in line with like just convenience. In terms of like, I mean, I wore my kid, I think, in some kind of baby carrier for the first year and a half of his life. I mean, like most of the time. And that was because we were on the move. And so there
you
were so many things.
Of,
and
that calm, too, to be that close to you.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of benefits to that just for both of you. But I would say, that was something that was not. Like planned or conscious, that was a total surprise. That there were ways that I wanted to raise Charlie, and just in whether it was breastfeeding or co-sleeping or baby wearing or any of those kind of more attachment minded.
What's co-sleeping? Like sleeping with your kid?
Yes. Take a word.
Well,
no.
You know,
yes.
I mean, I figured. I didn't know if it was like
yeah.
and the family
bed sharing,
sleeps together.
Co-sleeping. Yeah, yeah. The co-sleeping is a
is
little
that good?
Bit. I did it. I mean, I felt like it was very good for
me. Yeah,
it's really good.
If it works
I mean,
for you, yeah.
We did it. It's maybe a little hard to, like, our kids still really, like to come in our bed. So
yeah.
We were never great at like not co-sleeping. And when Dave's away, the kids sleep with me. It's great.
Yeah. That's.
Well,
sorry.
For us, I mean, yeah, if we were, we're on the road and Jamie and I would be sharing a hotel room and, you know, she would have one baby in bed with her and one in the pack and play between the two beds. And then Charlie was in bed with me. Or if we're playing a festival and they put us in a cabin. Yeah. Remember at Strawberry Festival, road, like on the road.
It's almost easiest. Like even not on the road, I find like she sleeps way deeper and like in better like next to me. And it's easier for breastfeeding because you just roll over and like here's your milk, you know.
I got more sleep. Yeah. It was survival. Like there were certain things about being on the road with my kid, just survival, that were really in line with the way that I wanted to parent. And I also noticed, I mean, really, it was very much kind of going back to like just tribal, like how mm-hmm. we raise our kids in a community and mm-hmm. how you do that is kind of a nomadic family. Yeah. So anyway.
No, it's funny. I've been thinking about this a lot, how, you know, it's funny, since having a kid, a couple other like musician girlfriends have like reached out to me who don't have kids and they're like, okay, I kind of want to have a kid. You're making me like feel like it's doable, which makes me feel so good because I looked at like all of y'all the same way. I was like, okay, if they're doing it, I can do it, you know? But what's funny is like now having, I mean, I'm only 8 weeks in, but I will say that I think that as artists, we almost have one of the best lifestyles that's conducive to having a child.
That's cool, yeah.
You know, I have a lot of mom friends who have to work and, you know, a 9-to-5 and they have a lot of constraints put on them by their job and they're like kind of envious of my lifestyle because I get to work, you know, and make money and do my creative thing. But I have such flexibility with like, I can be at home with her or, you know, leave her for a few hours with Paul while I go out and like teach a few lessons or have a gig or something and then come back and I can take her on the road. And it's like, it's interesting how being an artist is actually one of the, because you're so always multitasking and you're so, you have to be so flexible anyway. Like we don't really have much, you know, rigid yes, structure to our.
But,
yeah,
yeah. But yeah,
I don't have that either.
I think it's also important to remember that we're a lucky group of people who have been able to be a part of really cool projects and have work coming in and
absolutely.
Have a community around us. Because for some people, I think that they would be like, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not at all what it's like for me as an artist, you
totally,
know, like
absolutely.
Because
it's true.
It's doable for us because we're in a realm where it's like I took Ava on tour when she was 6 weeks old because I had a tour booked. You know,
yeah.
like
right.
some people don't have a tour book. They're like trying to book a tour for themselves. And
right.
also,
totally. No,
you know,
I would definitely
so like,
say there's when the time's right, you know. Yeah.
Well, and just I just mean that, like, I think every single person that has gotten pregnant since I've had Ava that I've talked to, I've tried to say the same thing, that like all of the books and all of the advice and all of the stuff mm-hmm. like will provide you a very, very tiny bit of perspective, like mm-hmm. a little bit. You know, but your world's going to be turned upside down when you have a kid. You're going to handle it a lot differently than you thought you were going to. And it's going to constantly evolve. And like the main thing is you need to have people around you. And really, that's it. You know,
yeah,
like
support group.
Because
yeah.
those people, everybody will do it differently. And that's like, to me, the most invaluable thing is to have a group of women around you that. But I mean, like I one of the things that enrages me more than anything is when mothers compete or argue with other mothers or attack other mothers for certain parenting things. And I'm like,
yeah.
that is literally the most unproductive and like tragic thing that can happen.
There's
that
no
they
need.
Wouldn't
it's,
rally,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
like what Savannah said about the tribe, like having a community is the most important thing that any mother needs, I think.
Yeah. And I also think like when you're a mom, it's really important, especially when you're a new parent, it's really important to be really kind to yourself, like to
yeah.
not be competitive or to be like punishing with yourself.
Right. That's instead of say putting someone else down, putting yourself down for the way that
because
other
I think
people
that's
parent.
Where
yeah,
all
yeah.
that parental competitiveness comes from, because it's really easy to feel like you're not doing a good job or you're doing it wrong, especially if you've never done it before. Like, you know, to be like, oh my gosh, I'm a bad mom or a parental fail, or like there's all this weird terminology out there. But like, just to be nice to yourself, though, you know, then I think if you are nice to yourself and you think like, well, I'm trying my best and I'm taking care of my child, and sometimes it, I'm doing a great job, and sometimes maybe I'm making a mistake that I get to learn from. You know, I think that's really important, and then you can be kinder to other people around you.
Right.
You won't feel as competitive. You won't feel like you need to like put someone else's parenting down because you need to make yourself feel good. Because yeah. we're really all of us like, it's so much bigger, like Jazz was saying, than anyone knows. You don't know what it is until you get there. Then it's constantly changing. As soon as you've got it figured out, they like have a growth spurt and they're a different kid.
Yeah.
So you just have to be really, really kind to yourself and patient and loving to yourself. You know, you yeah. can parent yourself a little bit, I think, is a good thing to
That's
do.
That's a good, yeah.
I want to let all the listeners know that, that Lulu was being passed around throughout the whole show.
I think I have pictures that of everybody holding her.
And the way that you guys handed and accepted the baby was so like mature. Like when you hand me a baby,
yeah.
even though I've been around babies like my whole life and I've held tons of babies, like there's kind of like, Zah! But there's like this kind of like, yeah, there you go. You know, like you guys have like, take the baby. You guys have like the perfect, like you have maternal
handoff.
Yeah.
Well,
are you leaving, Jess?
It comes from experience.
Okay. Well, no, it's time to wrap
we
up anyway.
Wrap it up,
I've really enjoyed this.
We
Susanna,
could talk
this was a great idea. Let's
Thanks,
do this
Johnny.
Again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
I think we should keep the conversation.
Name.
What's that?
Baby mama team name.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I'm saying.
The medulla sessions. Like,
I'd be curious
the
too.
The medulla sessions.
That's awesome. I'd be curious, Johnny, do your listeners have a way to like ask questions or if there are certain topics that they would like to hear more about?
They could, well, if they would, they can look all of you up. Savannah Welch, you're on Facebook. Are you on also Twitter?
Yes,
Elizabeth McQueen, Susanna Schoffel. Schoffel.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
If you look on the Trish's Music Instagram, it's called the Trish's Music, you'll see many, many pictures of kids on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just cool. Examples.
I enjoy them. Babies sleeping in guitar cases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's yes.
Gorgeous.
I think we should definitely do this again. I think like the main reason I wanted to do something like this is there really aren't a ton of resources. There's probably becoming more, but I remember like literally Googling like being a mom musician or, you know, music. Yeah, and there's like I maybe
wiki.
Found like two articles. There was like a... Someone did like a thing in the Chronicle a while back and they interviewed like Marsha Ball and different people about like, you know, and so there's a little bit of it, but I think it's really cool to just like have a conversation and dialogue going for people who are curious about having children
of
and being, because I think there is a lot of fear. I definitely had a lot of fear and it doesn't need to be there for a lot of reasons. So yeah.
I'll put links to all your stuff on here. And so you feel like maybe you got a little insight to stuff, what to expect?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I always think of that line in Middle of the Road by the Pretenders where Chrissy Hynde says, like,
I love that song so much. I'm not the girl I used to be. I got a kid. I'm 33, baby.
Yeah, because she's tired as hell. Yeah, she doesn't have the fight like she used to. And she's got
so
a kid.
Good.
She's 33. Yeah.
So good.
I think she was lying about her age then.
Because she could.
Totally. Yeah. If you're, you know, songs are
motherhood is
stretches.
A great thing, and I congratulate all of you. I think that all of you are great moms.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thanks, John.
That means a lot. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And let's do this again, Susanna. You're a great co-host. Say goodbye to the people.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Middle of the road. No private cul-de-sac. I can't get from the cab to the curb without some little drip on my back.